Right. Well, here we are, week 10. Can't believe it, week 10. And this week, the video's topic was financially fearless, which I remember when I was doing Living from the Inside Out. When I saw this, the topic of this, this is it. This is the one I've been waiting for. And I guess probably looking at watching the video and sort of having some reflection on my journey, I think I seem to remember when, before I came to the principles, I had a design business, which I might have told a few of you about, and I ran that with a couple of other people for about 15 years. And it was a roller coaster. You know, sometimes it was really successful and sometimes it wasn't. We had to lay people off and it was really painful. And my job was as the commercial director. So I was the one that was responsible for ensuring that there was enough projects and enough work for the company to make a profit and for us to be able to keep paying people. So I felt a real responsibility financially to make that successful. And I think looking back on that time, I remember I was, you know, I think money was definitely oxygen for me. It really felt like the world revolved around this life that I had, this company, and this company being successful so that I could support my family, I could pay the mortgage, I could do what all the things that most people strive to do. And I had that life, and I remember that I lived in total fear of not being able to bring enough money into to fulfill my responsibilities to my family and to the people that I employed in the company. It almost took over my life. I would work 12, 13 hours a day. And what I remember most was that I would spend 12 or 13 hours a day working on spreadsheets so that I could analyze the finances of the company and I would know to the penny what money was owed to the company and how I should recover that money. I would know to the penny how many projects we had running at any given time and how much money that would bring in. And I would know to the penny how many projects we quoted for and how much money that was going to bring in. And I would spend 12 out of the 13 hours a day managing this magic spreadsheet. This was my Bible, this thing. I lived by it because I had this idea in my head that it was all down to me. I had this idea in my head that I was the one that was controlling whether I was successful or unsuccessful when it came to the business and my life. And it drove me to despair. It drove me to clinical depression. It affected my health really badly for 15 years. And when I came to the principles, when I did this program, and which was the start of my journey, I began to see just how much effort and energy I was expending trying to control my fear about what would happen if I didn't control my life. I saw that I had set up rules about I needed to work this amount of hours. I needed to have this car. I needed to have business look this way in order for me to feel and what changed for me was that when I first began to look at my life from the point of view of the principles and how they were applying to it, I saw that I had so much noise in my head about insecurity, failure, the amount of work that I needed to do to keep all the plates spinning in the air. And when I saw that I'd just how much work I was doing to keep the plates in the air, I began to relax. And it didn't change overnight, but something happened with my business in as much as I stopped spending 12 hours a day on this spreadsheet and phoning people to get money in, phoning people to to talk about the projects that we're already working on. What I did was I began to worry less about how the money was coming in. And I spent more time just having conversations with new people. And the change in the business and the change in me was dramatic. I got to the point where I was so comfortable with it, and I started doing coaching as well at the same time when I started doing Super Coach Academy, that I said to my partners, I said, look, you know, this is all working fine. I can work here 3 days a week and I can make the same amount of calls. I don't have to pay all the attention that I was paying to the spreadsheet and the minute detail of the accounts and the finances. And what happened was I did that. I went down to 3 days a week, and the company, the amount of new business that came in just from me having those conversations, and those conversations came about as a result of me letting go of all that control that I needed to have, because I thought I needed to do that in order to feel secure, in order to be successful. So what's interesting to me now, a couple of years further down the line, is that I left the design business at the beginning of this year. And I apparently have a business where I coach and I do workshops. I say apparently because it seems to have grown up around me. It doesn't actually feel like I've created it. It doesn't feel like it's a business. It just feels like a way of life. life to me now. So I it seems to me, I don't always feel this, but it seems to me that I've got a lot more trust in mind. I've got a lot more trust in the kindness of the design. And what I do is I listen to listen to the signal a lot more than I used to, and pay less attention to the noise. When I listen to the signal, it says to me, okay, give this guy a ring. Or it will say to me, find out about this particular project because that looks really interesting. So for me, I think that so far I do, I don't know, probably out of all the projects that I work on and all the companies and all the people I work with, I probably charge for about 30% of it, 70% of it I don't charge for. And I don't have a, I don't have a policy. I don't look at the finances and say, I need to earn this amount of money, therefore I need to charge this much from this person. What seems to be happening is that I have a business, the 30% that I do charge, miraculously, this year anyway, has been more than enough for me to live on, more than enough for me to send my son to university, pay the rent, and all the other kind of overheads that I have for the business. So the lesson I've learned is that paying less attention to the noise, knowing that the noise is the thing that's stopping me from getting in touch with the guidance that will naturally allow my life to unfold in a way where I meet my responsibilities. It's been such a beautiful journey. Having said that, I get caught out now and again. I was just thinking this morning I had an envelope hit my doormat from the taxman, and I kind of looked at it and I was a little bit scared, and I didn't open it until lunchtime because I was a bit worried about what was in it. And then when I opened it, I got a rebate. So I kind of went like that in the space of about 3 hours. And it was really interesting to notice, you know, it was really interesting to notice. That's kind of my take on the video this week. And I don't know if that kind of lands with anyone, but Maureen, what was your take on the video?
Well, I love that video too, because it's kind of like last week about the health. And it's really what we've been talking about the whole time, living from the inside out. And it's no matter what we look at, it all comes back to really the principles, coming back from looking at things from the inside. And when I first saw the video, and Michael was talking about your homework assignment. I can remember years ago when I took my kids, when they were little, we went to Disney World with some friends, and it was just me and the girls and my girlfriend, her children. And we got there and I had one credit card back then, a Discover card. And I had a little bit of cash on me. I think I had like $150 in cash, right? So we get to Disney World, and my friend went in first. So she paid for her and her children. And then I got up there and I said, you know, two children, one adults. Well, whatever, I can't remember what the price was. And I hand her my credit card. She goes, well, we don't take Discover. And I said, well, I don't have enough cash. So all I have is like this $150. And I said, and my friend was already in. And so we're just standing there. And so finally, I just looked at the lady behind the counter and I just said, well, then I guess I need 3 children tickets. Because I had enough cash for 3 kids tickets. Didn't have enough. So she just looked at me, she looked at the kids, and she let us in for 3 children. And I gave her the cash. And I remember I had like $36 left. Now, we're going to be in Disney World all day on $36. And so I just looked at the kids and said, don't ask for anything. You're in. Ride all the rides you want, but don't even walk in the gift shop. You're not getting anything. And then later in the day, like when they got hungry, I'd go, and back then you could get the kids a little kid's meal. So their food wasn't very expensive. And then I would go up there and I would just ask for a glass of water and some complimentary saltines and some butter. That's what I would eat. But the kids today will tell you, my kids are now grown, of course, and they've got children. That was the best time they ever had in Disney World. And we've probably been about 10 times. But they'll tell you that was the best time. Because, and I think it was because there was not the restriction of the money. That wasn't even on the table anymore. It was just have fun. With no money involved. Because there was no money. But that's at the one end of the spectrum of I thought about when Michael was talking. And of course, on the other side of what Michael's talking about, the money, I see it all the time. My husband kind of does that. He has the fear of losing money. And Jackie might recall, because Jackie was with me when we did the IPIP with Michael back in the spring. And there was a thing one day when he told us all how much money, I don't remember how exactly it went. If you were asked to do something you didn't want to do, what price would somebody offer you for you to do it? I'm talking about like work. And he was saying, and how much money, if you lost some money, what is your number that would bother you if you lost that amount of money? Now, when Michael asked us to do that, I saw that very outside, like, because to me, money didn't really ring true to me because it's not, I do see it as just an object out there. It's not real. It's not the oxygen. It's not what we truly need. It is for certain things. I know that for rent, you know, to live, food, but to put it in that perspective, as he was doing it that day, I was kind of like, well, I'll play his little game, but it kind of seems irrelevant. But that's kind of how I saw that. But I see what he was doing to us also by the end, like he was bringing it back home where everybody does see money differently. Everybody has a different number that's important to them. But then when you really look at it in the whole, it really doesn't matter. I don't know if that's really making a lot of sense. It's just another thing. It's just another object. And to me, it all comes back home. Like what's in the home, what's in there. It's like our house. My stepdaughters come over and they're like appalled at our house. Danny and I live in, my husband, because we have 8-foot ceilings, vinyl floors, carpet, green from my countertops. But that's our home. And we've met with people, you know, we can afford a new house, a bigger house. And we went that route one time looking into it. And I just like, well, why? It doesn't change anything between you and I. We love each other in this old house. I'm comfortable in this old house. So to us, that's just material things. And so, and I see it, I guess, in selling real estate, a lot of people get hung up and they have to have the granite. I have to have my hardwood floors. I have to have vaulted ceilings. And I just kind of stand back. And every now and then I have to remind them, it's not the house that makes it a home. It's you and your children. It's what's in here that makes it a home. And so that's kind of how I see the relationship with money. When I do get caught up in it, and I do get caught up in it sometimes, and on the other flip side, when it comes to work, I love my assistant. She's my sister-in-law. But every now and then, of course, I pay her more than I've ever paid an assistant because she's great. And every now and then, I'll get upset because I feel like for what I pay her, she should have done a better job. Now, or she should have done something better. But when I get like that, I know a little while later, I'm going to see it differently. And just know she's doing the best she can. It's okay. We all make mistakes. I make them every day. She's a human being. When I take the money factor out, I love her and I think she's doing a beautiful job. But when I put the money aspect on it, when I bring money into it, which really isn't real, then that's when I feel the eek, eek. And then I know I have to go back home, go back in. So it is, it's kind of like a juggling act. So that's kind of my take on
Yeah, thanks, Mo. It's funny, you were saying that it's all the same thing, and I was thinking about what Michael said last week about, you know, what happens in your body is one thing, and then what you think about it, your experience of it, is something different. And that's exactly the same as money, as far as I can see. You know, what happens in my bank account is one thing. My experience of what happens in my bank account and what it means is a totally separate thing. That's coming from my insecurity or security or whatever happens to be passing through my head at the time.
Yeah. But really, when I see it with my assistant, that's when it's really true.
Mm.
When I see it in her, when I get upset, it's always the money. Now, if I was paying her half that amount, it probably wouldn't bother me that when she didn't do something. But that's when it becomes real. That's when it feels real. You know, oh my God, I pay her this much. I should get better results, right?
Yeah.
But then flip back into it's okay.
Nice. Okay.
Love to hear what some other people have to say about money.
Yeah.
No, that's what drives the train of enlightenment, really, to begin with. We look in this direction, I feel like, to make our lives better, richer, richer in here and richer in our bank account. Mm-hmm. And yep. when you find it here, kind of like what Steph was talking about earlier, I notice it creeps in and I don't even notice where it's coming from. It just shows up. Kind of like the envelope at Steph's door this morning. It just appears.
Yeah. So I love some of the things that were being said on Facebook. Some really nice comments. So I'd like to hear from some of you about stuff you might have put on Facebook or stuff that you've thought about since you've seen the video and haven't had a chance to say anything yet.
We have Rex.
Rex.
Okay, Rex, I'm unmuting you.
Rex.
Thank you. I'm just going to run off and turn the light on. Hold on.
Okay. Looks like he's in a cellar.
Right. Hey. Right, I realised that you couldn't see me. Yeah, right.
How you doing? How you doing?
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm doing all right. Managed to rupture my Achilles tendon, but I've got a boot and it's on the repair. The thing for me about money is I find whenever I have conversations with people, if I even think about money, then I lose the plot as to what the conversation is about. And I recognise your description, Steph, because I ran a business for a while. I used to do the business case the whole time, day and night. And I was conflicted between making judgments about money versus judgments about value, about what people would actually want. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, that business didn't work. It didn't work at all, and I never got it into the right place. And now what I'm finding is that I just enjoy not doing the money side and just having the conversation side, and without a clue as to where it's going to go. And the more I do that, the more things come in. And I just had this very conversation with my wife in perhaps a rather too enervated way. And she was saying, "Oh, right, well, what you could do is do a profile of the work that you've got and the time for which which it covers and what the money is and how much you're going to get for each month and see what the shape of it is." And I said, "Well, for me, that's trying to drive a car on by measuring the exhaust fumes. And it doesn't tell you anything about what you need to do to decide on the journey, to steer it or make the car right." And I can't say that she sees that in the way that I am seeing it. Mm. So I just wanted to share that and to say, you know, I think I'm starting to get, by not looking at the money, then the money comes because I'm focusing on what is really valuable to people.
I love that.
That's nice, Rex.
I love that. I there's so many things in there that I recognize. There's so what I've noticed with me when I was in the design business towards the end and with me now, with what I understand about the principles, is that people buy from people. And what influences people to buy from you, what influences people to buy from me, is the connection. So pure and simple, the connection that is already there underneath all the thinking that we've got. Okay, there is a connection already there. There's a connection between all of us that is already there. Now, what I used to do is I used to enter into a conversation about a project, say, for instance, and I would have so much thinking about, does he like what I'm proposing? Does he like me? And what can I say to make him more engaged with what I'm doing? And I really need this project. It's like the money. I really need this project. So I need to make sure that I'm saying the right things in order to get the outcome that I want.
Yes.
And what I've seen about the principles, what I've seen about this connection that we already have, is that when I'm focusing on the noise, when I'm focusing on the spreadsheet in my head about what I want to happen, about how much to charge, about how I want to impress them, how I want to engage them, I'm just blocking off that connection that's already there. You know, if I have a perfect example of what you talked about with the money thing, is it's like when you're being sold a car by a second-hand car salesman. You know, you can sense, you can feel that he will say anything in order to sell you that particular car, because that's the outcome that he wants. And there's a yucky feeling to that. There's a kind of an energy behind that that doesn't feel positive. If I'm talking to a secondhand car salesman that says to me, look, I honestly don't think we've got what you want, and you know, maybe you could try this guy down the road, I know he's trying to serve me. He's not looking at what he can get out of it. He's not looking at the outcome that he's so desperate for. And I would go, if I had felt that energy with that guy, I would try and find a car that he could sell me, just because I wanted, because I knew he wanted to be of service to me, because I knew that he was connecting on a level that didn't include all the noise and all the agenda that he might have. So I love that. I love that. That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. Does that make sense, Rex? Is that?
Yes, it does. It does. Thank you.
Good.
Thank you, Rex. We have Sean. Sean, I'm going to unmute you.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
Yeah, it was a couple of things kind of came to mind with this week's stuff, really. One of them was almost it was when me and my wife were buying our first house, and it kind of came to me in the sense that really kind of money in a way is all made up anyway, you know, because we bought off plans, so it was cheaper, and then they do it in phases and release it, and as the phases go through, obviously the price goes up. And we were in the office with the rep sort of this one day, and of course we're talking to her, and the phone goes, and she starts talking to somebody from the company, and she's sort of saying, oh yeah, it's on for such and such a price, and then what do you want me to stick it up by? And then she went, right, okay, well I'll add that 45,000 on. And of course, me and the missus are looking at each other, thinking, "Hang on, she's just tagged on 45 grand for the same bricks and mortar that we've not paid sort of that amount for." And I'm thinking, "How can they do that?" And it's just kind of almost plucked a figure out of the air, come off the top of her head, and then I was thinking, "That's just daft." How the same sort of commodity almost is valued at two different things. And when we were talking about this through the money, that kind of came to mind. But then I thought, you know what? The people who moved into that house were completely unaware of what it was before anyway. So they wouldn't have then sort of started to question the number. To them, the value of the house was the value they got getting the house, you know, and obviously making it the home. So that was the first thing that kind of came to mind. And the second thing that was what I mentioned on the Facebook page, which was kind of, you know, growing up, we weren't the most affluent of families, but do you know what we did? We didn't need to be. We used to have a cracking time, and that to me seemed to, the older we get, we seem to pile on these layers of thought and of expectation that we think we have to have, and in a way that kind of reinforces to me that almost being in that childlike thinking, that sort of untarnished state almost, is probably that better way to be, rather than having to get all these. You know, people are always telling me to grow up, and I keep telling them I don't want to, and that's a good thing, because, you know, why would I want to kind of poison my mind with all kinds of worries and thoughts and stuff if I can just carry on just enjoying what I do, you know? Yeah. I think sometimes you underestimate that power of childlike thinking, you know? I see it in my son, and I just think, God, he's got... Yeah. Right, you know, it's gone, then it's forgotten. It's
yeah.
And I think Maureen's been speaking to my wife as well, because you know, the granite tops are this, for that, that's on your list, you know. So
I was just thinking, this sounds perfect for Maureen.
Perfect. You want her to talk to me because I would talk her out of it.
Yeah. I'll give you the number.
Yeah, I'm always like, oh, granite's not all what it's cut out to be. It's too cold.
Yeah. It's one of those. I keep saying to Will, a sink holds water, whether it's round or square or triangular, whatever. Still a sink.
Yeah. But to me, it's just all about keeping everything simple. It's like the principles are simple. The way I work now is so simple. But that's what works for me. Now, some people love granite. That's good, because not everybody loves my green formica. But it just works for me. That works for somebody else. And that's the beauty of everything is again, we talk about there's no right or wrong, you know, and it is such a beautiful act to see somebody who likes the really big houses. And then you've got the ones that like the teepees, which Steph, I ordered my grandson one for Christmas and it came the other day. I got him a big teepee, but it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's just, there's peace in all of it. And that's what we keep coming back to each week. That's why we're here for 12 weeks, to just kind of keep you coming back to the conversation, coming back to the core of it all. And the more you keep coming back home to it, the more familiar it is for you. Thank you, Sean.
Oh, thank you, Sean.
I'm going to mute you back up. And Andrew. Where are you, Andrew?
Andrew.
Are you?
Well, I live in a 200-square-foot silver bullet with my wife and three dogs, and we travel all over the place, and that's more than enough. And we might have a big house on the hill someday, but who cares? I had one of those ones.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a question. I'm new to the work. I just signed up for Super Coach Academy 2017, so I'm excited about that. Yay!
Yay! Well done.
Yeah. I'm not new to spiritual practices, and I'm not new to this idea about money. I'm very young. I had the thought that money is all made up, and it doesn't mean anything. And if it's made up, you can make up that you have some, or you can make up that you don't have some, or it's stressful or not stressful. So I've been pretty good at that. What I have a question, though. So I've been doing coaching for about 15 years, and I have this thing called the perfect balance. My individual clients, not corporate clients, my individual clients, I generally let them pick how much they're going to pay me. Say, well, it's up to you. You know, what do you want to get out of it? You choose, and that's what we'll charge. And that's worked out pretty good. I have a whole little system for doing that. But I haven't managed to do that with my corporate clients, because I haven't even tried it, but my fear is, it's like, okay, you pay me what you want. They're like, okay, zero. How do people charge, or how do you charge your corporate clients?
Oh, that's a good one. This is a personal thing with me, but I tend to connect with people at the proposal stage. I tend to try to get really deep into what they want. Mm-hmm. And then I don't have a framework or an hourly rate per se, but it's as simple as whatever occurs to me in the moment. Because, and I'll tell you why, because I used to have, when I was in the design business, I used to have an hourly rate, and we used to, and the hourly rate just, for some people, it seemed to work. For other people, it didn't seem to work. And I spent so much time thinking about what I should charge, why I should charge it. So for me now, I'm quite happy to see what occurs to me. And I can go to two different companies and charge totally different prices for depending on how I feel in the moment. Now, it's interesting because I had a conversation with Michael, Neil and George Pransky a couple of weeks ago about this. And he was saying he knew a friend of his who was a salesman. I can't remember what he was selling, some kind of service. And he said he walked into a business cold without knowing them. He would get himself an interview with the financial director, and he would, in the moment, he would be he would talk about the service that he could give, and quite a few times the FD would be impressed enough to say, okay, so I need this, this and this, how much would you charge me? And from memory, what Michael said to me, he, without skipping a beat, he said, well, okay, for one 3-day session, I will charge you £200,000. He had no thinking about that at all. Mm-hmm. It was just what occurred to him in the moment. And it was surprising just how many times, just how many different prices he quoted, and just how many, what would seem outrageous to us, people agreed to pay for, because they could see the value in how he was presenting himself, how he was presenting the service that he was giving. So for me, that was a really good lesson, and it kind of, I really do trust that, I trust my wisdom and my intuition more than I trust a matrix of prices. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I want to be fair or unfair with people. It's just that I in that place of negotiation, I feel I'm being of service as well. And in the service that we're offering, you know, it's the you can't put a price on it, you can't put a value on it. So I wouldn't charge, I say this now, it might occur to me to charge £200,000 for a 3-day workshop one day, but it seems to me that I get more agreement by being in the moment, being connected with people, understanding what they want, and being of service to them, rather than trying to work it out based on a matrix that I worked out like 6 months ago. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What one of the things that I've discovered, you know, I have that money doesn't mean anything. And then once I start to work with my clients, they get that too. So we might increase the fee, we might decrease the fee over time. And we're not doing it from a place of scarcity or whatnot, and that works out great.
Yeah.
But before I get to really work with them in a deep way, they have that money means something, right? And what I have found is not, I don't undercharge. If I don't charge them enough, then they don't value it enough. Unfortunately, I work with a lot of CEOs of, you know, pretty successful companies. I've got a guy right now, and I realize I'm not charging him enough because he doesn't. His framework right now is, well, I can skip a coaching call anytime I want. It's nothing. You know, we haven't started working together yet. And money isn't the thing, but that's how they see it.
Yeah.
My experience.
I understand that.
So if I charge him £200,000, he would definitely show up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's, I think that's kind of what I'm saying is that, that's why I trust to a certain extent. I trust in the moment that connection with somebody that I'm not trying to calculate from my personal mind, from my experience and from my from what I already know about this client or what I've charged before, I hope I'm accessing is something deeper than that, something that will be sustainable, something that will address those concerns if the person might have it, whether it was, you know, too cheap or too expensive. I trust that the connection, I trust that that the moment will tell me what it needs.
Yeah. Well, the insight that I just gained out of us talking together is, if I said to these high-level corporate clients, executives, what would be the price that I would need to charge or you would need to pay for you to show up? Because if you don't show up, there's nothing, right? They got to show up. And so I might try that. Like, what is it going to take for you to, you know, show out of that account so that you show up on a whatever regular basis or whatever? I'm still figuring out how I'm going to go forward, because right now I coach every week or every other week, and I might do away with that whole system. But
that sounds like an insight.
I know.
That like, sounds woo. Like an insight. Yes.
That's pretty good.
What do you want to pay?
Ring so the bell.
I'm going to start saying that. What do you want to pay so you'll show up?
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what I'm going to charge.
That's so cool. Yeah.
In the very beginning, Andrew, when I first got on, you were talking to Steph and to Annette and everyone. I saw the visionary thing written up there. And at first I thought, I didn't have my glasses on. I thought, what kind of foreign name is that? What is the name? Yeah. That was your name. The thing, I was sitting there trying to figure it out. And then it came up, Andrew.
Visioneers, wasn't it?
I made that up when I was in the Silicon Valley, and there was, you know, all this competition. There were coaches and stuff, and everything. I'm a coach. I didn't want to say that. I said, well, I'm a visionaire. And people were like, what's that? And I just make it up every time. What's that? I'm like,
yeah, you make it up. Just
it doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
It's the same thing about your clients will show up if they pay enough.
That's right.
All this is an illusion.
You know what? I just wanted to add one little thing. When I was first starting out, my first gig I got was working with a very large company. I guess I could say it. It's Hewlett Packard. And when I first got out of consulting and into this, I was like, well, I charge $150 an hour. And I'm sitting in front of them. I'm like, they won't respect that. So I doubled $300. Now they won't respect that. $600. I'm like, oh man, that'd be hard. $1,200 an hour. And I'm like, oh man, I can't even say that. So I just blurted out $800. And they went, okay, that's great.
Yeah. See, the blurted bit was the wisdom.
I know.
Everything else was thinking. Everything
I know, yeah, calculations.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Brilliant. That's perfect, Andrew. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gorgeous. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah. Do we have anyone else, Annette? And we're going to start picking on people?
Yeah, or I think we might have to start picking on people.
Oh, right. Okay. Let me see. Who would you? Sorry?
I can't see, so you pick on them.
Oh, you can't see? Okay. Well, that's handy. So I get to be the baddie.
Average.
Now this is interesting, because Michael, when I was doing Living from the Inside, in fact every single online program that I've ever done with Michael, he always used to pick on me several times.
He never picked on me.
Yeah, that's because you were hidden. Okay, so let me see, who haven't we heard from before? Let me see. I think we've heard from most people, actually, haven't we? How about Sarah? Sarah, we haven't heard from you for a while. What are you hearing?
I was thinking, like I was last week, I haven't been very well. I have ME, mm-hmm. and I'm very exhausted. And part of me was feeling almost angry with the stuff last week about, you know, illness, but I know it's true, but there's one part of me when I'm so exhausted, I don't see what I can see.
Yeah.
When I, you know, when I've got even a half tank of fuel would be great. When it just feels a little bit like survival, I can't, it's like I can't absorb, it's It's like I've got this kind of like a ray shield.
Mm.
And occasionally that will drop, and occasionally I will be able to bring something in. But with the ME, sometimes the brain doesn't work the same. And that's what used to, I think that used to, what used to kind of sometimes irritate me with when I've been coached before, is that, like, if you know, it's all thought. It's your thinking that's creating your health. And I'd be going, well, you know, I've been doing all the right things. I've been living in a very calm and, the inner critic doesn't exist anymore. So I'm quite cool. You know, I'm nice to myself. Mm. Why am I still ill? I know this is nothing to do with finances. But actually, I got ill about 6 years ago, and I've had to go on a reduced contract, if you like. Mm. And my money dropped considerably. And if I didn't have any other sort of income stream, I just couldn't live on what I am. It's about, it's about a third of what I used to earn like 10 years ago.
Mm.
But that, I know that panic, or was it even panic? That little bit of like, do I look at my health first and allow the money to go? I kind of knew that that would only last maybe a few days or a week.
Mm.
And then it wouldn't matter.
Mm.
And now I know it doesn't matter. Through my, I suppose, your adult growing up years, if you like, it was always about, when I get to a figure, when I earn more money, you can blame your unhappiness or your discomfort on not having enough money.
Mm.
Until you do, actually, you go, well, actually, I do know I do have it. I've had enough money and I'm still unhappy. It's nothing to do with the money.
No.
It's never anything to do with the money.
No. I think when you were talking earlier about, you've had coaching before and you know that it's your thinking that is creating your health. I can't remember exactly what you said about it. But your health is affected by your thinking. I think there's a difference between the notion that our thinking is creating our health and the notion that our body is doing whatever it's doing. Whatever we've got that our body is trying to recover from, is trying to get better from, that is happening. There's nothing that the three principles says that our thinking creates our health. It's definitely more like your body is doing what it's doing anyway, but your experience of what your body is doing is coming from your thinking, which is why it allows, I'm guessing, some people and probably yourself, you have a different experience of your health at different times. It probably fluctuates, I'm guessing, I'm assuming that. And that, I think there's, for me, okay, there are some people that are much more, that have been through what you're going through themselves and can speak about it from a principal's point of view. But I think for me, it's the, when we think that it's our thinking that's creating our health, or when we think that there's nothing we can do about it, we feel that that's who we are. That's what we're locked into. The fact that our experience is being created from our thinking, and we kind of know that thinking flows through us, and at some point, as you described, at some point you know it's going to feel different. To me, there's a real comfort in that. And like I say, I do know. Have you ever spoken to a guy called John L. Mockaden?
No.
No? Okay. Well, if you like, I'll put you in touch with John, because he's been through a similar health problem as you, and he specializes in coaching people with that. He's an amazing guy. He's really an amazing guy. He really knows what it feels like. So if you would like that, I can get that set up.
Yeah, that could be helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, I rely a lot on my own, rely on my own wisdom more. Yeah. You know, I'm responsible for my health. You can't, you know, someone else isn't going to make you better.
No.
It'd be interesting to see whether there's something different.
Well, I think it's the same as this, you know, it's the same as this community. I never think that we call it coaching. I feel a bit uncomfortable with that word. I prefer to think of it as we're looking in the same direction, and we're seeing what we can see, and we can explore what we can explore. I don't think for one minute that if I coach somebody about something, I've given them some sort of gift that they get some wisdom from, and it doesn't work like that. I see it that we're sitting on a riverbank and we're both looking out, and it's what we see together. It really is that. It really is that. So I can't give you anything. John can't give you anything, but you both looking in the same direction has power to it.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
We might run a few minutes over, and I apologize. Sarah.
Yeah.
You were talking, and last night I was invited to a dinner that I forgot about. Jeez. And some people sent me a video of what was going on at the dinner last night. Oh, we missed you. And I had actually taken my grandkids to see my mother, because I hadn't seen her in a couple of weeks, and I thought, we're not going to be here for the holidays. I wanted her to see the grandkids, her great-grandchildren. So I had gone over there, and so I forgot this dinner, which was fine. But they were sending me videos and pictures of what was going on at this gathering, at this dinner last night. And it was some friends of mine, and they were doing like drumming and all this, I'm trying to think what you call it, spiritual stuff. They, you know, they did like these dance. They were drumming and doing like Indian,
like a ritual.
Like a ritual. Thank you, Steph. And when I saw that, I thought, "Well, I'm glad I wasn't there." And then I thought, because I've moved beyond that. I don't have to have those rituals, these things. And I can remember being a part of that before, thinking, "Oh, it feels good. Yeah, I feel." You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And
then I thought, then I felt bad for thinking different of them because they were doing that. But I thought, oh, no, that's good for them, because that's where they're at. That's their belief system. That used to be my belief system. It's not my belief system anymore. But that's fine for me, and that's fine for them, because where they are. And if that gives them relief, there's nothing wrong in that. Now, for me, the principles have brought everything brought it home. There we go. We go back home again. I know it sounds corny because I keep saying that. But it all comes back to our own self-love. Just loving ourselves where we're at. Accepting my freaking shoulder. I don't know why it hurts me and won't let me raise my arm anymore. But I'll figure it out. Either that or I still have another one. Doesn't matter. I just, going back to my own self-love of myself and not letting other belief systems, they're just out there. And there again, there's no right or wrong. Just come back home to who you are, Sarah, and that beautiful smile of yours. And look in the mirror and smile, and you've got to feel better. Even for a moment. And in a way, yeah, everything else just kind of goes to the wayside. Just bring it back home.
It's always there. And I think the thing is, because I felt so amazing for so long, to be this, and it is, it's pure exhaustion.
Yeah.
It's pure exhaustion. And I know that this will go. I know that this, you know, the sun will come out tomorrow. I'm not going down with it. It's, and I don't take it seriously. I almost have nothing, so there's not words there though.
That's great.
Today is it isn't tomorrow or next week. It may take a month, it could take 2 months, which sometimes is what happens. But with what I know now, to have great energy, to be able to, mm-hmm, to create is just, that's such a gift. I'm guessing this just, it's just going to teach me something. And I know that when I was first had a burnout and then I had virus and I was ill for a long time. And I remember thinking, if somebody had a magic pill to give me, that I would be instantly better. I wouldn't want to take it because I knew I had to work it. I had to work through it. I knew it was taking me somewhere.
That's right. And it'll all be okay. It's only your, it's just your journey, no one else's.
I want a date. This is the thing. It's like, I want to get out there. I want a date. And it's like, I'm so frazzled now. I can't get, you know, it's like, how do you do that? How do you do that and be so frazzled?
Thank you so much.
It'll happen. It'll.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Maureen. Thanks, Steph.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay. I don't know whether Steph and Maureen want to add something, or shall I just unmute you since so we're a little bit over?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, everyone. I've unmuted everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.